We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you live at spring training. Our spring training coverage brought to you by Velocity Academy right there in Belton. You can get all the hitting, pitching lessons you need, velocityacademy.org, or call them at 816-425-5870. Also brought to you by our friends at Sprint. We talk right now to the manager of the Kansas City Royals. Ned Yost joins us here in the program. Ned, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. You like the cold weather?
You know what? I was just thinking, you're pretty lucky. I can't think of a warmer place right now than exactly where you're at right now.
We are. We're in the sunshine.
I was complaining to Mike Swanson a little bit that it might be a little too cold to come out and do this, but he assured me that it wasn't. And once again, he was right on the button. It's not too bad here.
No, it's not too bad. If you're in the sun, it's not too bad.
And stay away from the breeze. The breeze is what seems to kill you here.
Yeah.
If the wind's not blowing, it's tolerable, but when the wind blows, man, it is cold.
It is an odd climate, to say the least.
Yeah, no doubt.
The desert. All right, Ned, let's talk about this squad. I want to talk first about your philosophy. You were quoted as saying something to the effect of, I'm more interested in the people. I care more about the people than I do the wins and losses.
Yeah.
Right? Did I accurately quote you on that? I love that statement. Can you tell me how, though, it translates to a fan, how that becomes? Because it got a lot of play.
I'm sure it did. Because a lot of people don't understand the context of exactly what that means.
And so what does it mean?
It means that my whole focus is winning. Right? And my coach's focus is winning. Our goal is to win a national championship. But
Even a World Series.
A World Series. I mean, I'm thinking about Oregon State here yesterday and talking to Adley Richman and their national championship endeavors. And
yes,
but the way that you win, especially in this game now, a lot of this game has reduced players and personalities to a math equation. All right.
Okay.
And it takes away from what a person's goals are, what a person's dreams are, and what he can accomplish, in my mind, as an individual. And I think that when we set forth in spring training, what we want for each and every player is for him to achieve the level of his talent. We want him to be as good as he can possibly be. Everybody's got talent levels. Everybody's talent level is different. You try to get to the point where you can reach the maximum and maximize their ability as a baseball player. All right. So when I talk to my players, I tell them I want them focused on buying into what we're doing. I want them to be all in to what they're doing and to what we're doing. And I want them to solely focus on winning ball games, playing baseball to win, not playing baseball to stack up numbers, not to rack up strikeouts, not to rack up RBIs or home runs. Do what it takes every single day to win. That's your job as a player. Our job as a coach is to be all into you. All right? It's our job to develop you. It's our job to teach you. It's our job to mentor you. It's our job to set the tone. It's our job to guide and direct you so that you can reach your level. Allow us to help you gain your physical numbers so that at the end you get paid. You worry about the winning, we'll worry about your numbers. So in order to do that, you've got to care about that person more than you do winning. If you care more about that person than you do winning, all of a sudden that person's going to perform. You got 18 guys performing on your team, you're going to win. So it just helps the equation of winning much, much better in my estimation. If I'm coming at you and saying, okay, look, I don't think that you're very good, or the numbers say that you can't play today, you're going to lose guys when you do that. You have to find ways to, make sure that you're communicating, making sure everybody knows where you're at, where they're at. And I told our players, if you don't understand what type of player you are or who you are, you need to talk to a coach. because we're going to set you straight. All right. We're going to try to maximize everything that you have as a baseball player. But I've found that if I stay focused on the individual and I care about the individual, and it's not shortcut and winning, you're going to win more ball games. So as a coach, do I care about winning? Yeah. You know, the agony of defeat is far worse than the thrill of victory. For some reason, if it was the same, it would be great, but it's not. You lose a ball game, you go home and you're pissed, you can't sleep. You win a ball game, you go home and say, okay, that was what we're supposed to do, and you go to bed and you wake up the next day. So it's not an even, it's not an even mix. If it were the same, it would be fine, but it's not. So that's why everybody hates to lose. We don't want to lose. We want to try to find a way to win every single day, but you have to find the best way to win. And what makes sense to help you win more ball games. And for me and my coaches, I found that if I stay focused on you, that I care more about you than anything else, you are going to take us to victory.
How did your and I think that's well put. How did your conversation with Adley Rutschman go?
It went great.
What do you think?
He has a neat kid. Smart kid. I didn't know. There's a little history there. It's funny how you talk about a small world. His dad actually coached my son, Ned, when he was in college.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know that. And I called Ned last night. So you remember? He goes, yeah, I remember. And I said, well, I got to meet him and his son. But it was fun. I think you see young men with especially one that's really, really talented and has had some success at the college level. But, his eyes light up when he gets on a big league field. Here he is, a catcher, won the MVP of the College World Series last year. And to see his eyes light up when Salvador Perez came over and talked to him was amazing. And those are the kind of things we were talking about earlier, about caring about people. To see his eyes light up just made my day because he was talking to Salvador Perez.
Right.
So it was special.
Yeah. Did you get a picture of that? Of
in my mind, mentally.
Yeah. Okay. Because that'd be a great one.
Yeah. I don't think. I don't know. John Sleaser doesn't miss much. Maybe he got a picture of it.
I'll have to go hit him up and ask him about it. You talked about doing the things to win. Right. And so much of, and you talked about the math guys, and that so much of that these days is hit the ball over the wall, is on base. But a lot of what the math is about is finding the inefficiencies, finding where there's hidden value.
No doubt.
And I know that there's an analytics department here with the ball club, and I know they work very hard, and I know those numbers come to you. We've talked about it before. Is stolen bases where you found the inefficiency this year? Because you clearly loaded up on the speed part of it.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't stolen bases per se, as it was just the
speed.
Way it's just the way the game was played.
Okay,
for me, the game has gotten a little bit boring. As a man, I'm serious. I mean, singles are way down. We have more strikeouts than singles last year. The strikeouts are way up. It just seems like, we're shifting everybody. Nobody's trying to beat the shift. Very rarely does it happen. And if it happens, it's by a mistake. You're just rearing back. Nobody's stealing. Nobody's hitting and running. So as a manager, you sit there and hope that your pitcher doesn't make a mistake and give up a home run. And that's the only thing at the end of the day. And six cups of coffees later, trying to keep you awake through this game, the ball game's over. So for me, I love an action style game. I like athletic players. I like guys that can cover the world in the outfield, especially in Kauffman Stadium, as big as it is. I like rangy infielders that can take pressure off your pitching staff. And I like speed. I like to put pressure on the opposing defense.
And that's kind of what I'm getting at. No one's doing that anymore.
Nobody.
So you're going to be the unique team.
Absolutely.
Teams come in, their pitcher can kind of just humpty dumpty up on the mound and throw because nobody runs anymore because it's too much of a risk. And we know if we get out, the mass says we shouldn't have run. And so nobody runs anymore. And now that you're going to come into Kauffman Stadium or you're going to roll into their park, and it's like, whoa, wait a minute. I got all these guys running all over the place.
What happens a lot of times is, over the course of a year, you'll play a team, and there'll be one guy that's a little imposing,
right
in the lineup. I mean, it may be Joey Votto, it may be Barry Bonds, you don't know who it is, little intimidating. So you're always looking to see when that guy comes up, right? And when he comes up, and he's done, then you take a break. Okay, you're not coming up for eight more guys. With our team, that's not going to be the case. Our whole team is going to be intimidating and imposing. And people,
if you get on base.
Speed is not worth a darn if you don't get on base.
Right.
Just like power is not worth a darn if you can't make contact.
Right.
Right. So, of course, you know, does that change the way we go about spring training and our focus offensively? Yes, it does. But here's the thing. Let me give you a little story. And I don't know if I've ever told you the story before, but when I was with the Braves, Chuck Tanner was the manager of the Braves when I first came in.
Okay.
And I was getting dressed one day, and Chuck said, "Hey, come on in here, sit down, let's visit a little bit." So I'm like, "Okay, we'll visit." He got to telling me about the 79 World Series. And when he was, you know, managing Pittsburgh, they were playing Baltimore, and they were down 3-1, and he felt like they had to change tactics a little bit. So he came out in the press after they lost that game and said, "Look, we're going to have to do some things different. We're going to have to get on base and just run wild. You know, that's what, you know, we're just."
And what year was this?
This was 79.
Okay.
Right? "We're going to have to just run wild. We're going to have to go. We're going to have to go." He said, "I knew that Rick Dempsey was a catcher that took a lot of pride in his defense and a lot of pride in his throwing. But I told our guys, look, we're not going to really be able to run. But every person that you see, tell them we're going to run. We've got to change our philosophy here. We're going to run. We're going to run. We're going to run." Well, all of a sudden, they started getting more fastballs down the middle. They started getting better hitting counts. And they ended up winning Game 5, Game 6, and Game 7 to win the World Series, right? So that resonated with me. In 2014, when we played the wild card game, we stole 7 bases in front of the world. I mean, just took off and ran, won the game. Played the Anaheim Angels, 3 games there, we were just running every opportunity we had, right? So it was putting pressure on defense. When we came to play Baltimore, I got our guys together, and Chuck Tanner, fresh in my mind, for media day, I got them all in my office. I shut the door, and I said, "Let me all tell you something. Every one of these guys are very proficient at the running game. They're all 1-1, 1-2 to the plate. We're not going to be able to run on these guys. But I want each and every one of you guys to go upstairs and tell every reporter that you see we're going to run wild. All right? Every time we get on base, we're going to run, we're going to run, we're going to run." Right? That alone was enough to put so much pressure on their pitching staff. It seemed like we were ahead in the count the whole series. They'd be down, ball 1, ball 2, try to throw a ball down the middle, blam, here we go, right? And ended up sweeping them. It worked to our advantage. Instead of trying to be 1-1 to the plate where we couldn't run, they were all trying to be .09. So speed definitely has an effect on the opposition, on the defense. So if you can prove that you've got speed, if you can prove that you're going to be relentless with your pressure, and you can prove that you're going to get on base, you're going to be a massive headache for every team that you play.
I thought of the 92 Brewers with Phil Garner. Phil Garner took over the Brewers, and he did the same thing. He gave everybody the green light. That was the year Pat Listach won the Rookie of the Year. But, like, B.J. Surhoff stole 15 bases.
Right.
Kevin Seitzer stole 17. Now, I was looking at it. They were also caught a lot. Like, Seitzer, I think, was 17 of 34. You know, you guys, but they were going.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Well, that's not going to work. 17 of 34 is not going to work. So, you know, we're not, you know, we try to be, and again, you go back to the math equations. We have really good information,
right?
And have an idea on the percentages. You know, we know counts. We know, you know, keys. There's a lot of stuff that we have to help us, you know, make more informed decisions when to steal and who to steal off of.
That team won 93 games.
Yeah.
Even with that kind of dynamic going on. So it was, I thought that was, and I think it is, maybe not that team, the way it jumps out at me, wasn't the inspiration. Chuck Tanner was obviously your inspiration.
Yeah.
And it's nice to know you've used this idea before. That was part of the postseason success.
Well,
can a team go like that for an entire 162 game season?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, they absolutely can. But again, you know, there's a lot of things that we're going to have to improve on from over the year. We're going to have to improve on our two-strike approach. We're going to have to improve on our plate discipline. We're going to have to be able to win the 3-2 count. You know, we're going to have a mindset, you know, that on-base percentage is one of the most important things we can do. And then once you get on base, your mindset has got to be score a run. And that means that you've got to be ready to take advantage of any situation that allows you to advance 90 feet. That means that we have to anticipate, and we have to be prepared for breaking balls in the dirt. You can't just sit there and get caught short and see a breaking ball bounce away 3 or 4 feet and be standing on first base. That can't happen. You know, we've got to have that mindset that when we go, we're going to put pressure, and we're going to put relentless pressure on the defense. But, yeah, I mean, it all revolves around getting on base, no doubt about it.
Billy Hamilton is one of the guys that was brought in to be one of those pieces. A guy who got on base at a really good clip in the minor leagues has not been able to do that at the big leagues. When he gets on, he is a terror. You can see the wheels out there in center field. How do you said on base is going to be a part of it. A lot of people tell you kind of are what you are after a certain number of at-bats. Dayton's talked about, you know, we don't really know what a guy is until it's 1,500 at-bats. He's over 2,000. How do you make him better at the
what I found? Part? What I have always found is that speed develops later. Now, if you look at Billy Hamilton's speed, how many players in all of baseball have Billy's speed?
Maybe five? Terrence Gore.
Okay, so I mean, would you say five? Maybe, but it's probably less than five, right?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
The problem that you run into and why speedsters develop late is because nobody knows how to develop speed. They just develop them like they would a regular player. They develop them like they would Whit Merrifield or like they would Jorge Bonifacio. You know, they don't take into advantage. They don't take into account that this guy is special and he has to be developed totally different than everybody else, right? It has to be totally different. And that's why speed develops late, is because it takes them a little while for them to understand, I've got a tool that nobody else has. Is it a Greg Maddux said the commercial, chicks dig the long ball, right? Well, everybody wants to hit the long ball, but he can't do it. He's got to be different. His mindset is, I'm different. Terrence Gore, my mindset, I'm different. Mondi, he's a different bird. Mondi's a 5-tool legit player that's got power from both sides and speed. All right? They just don't have those. So you develop Mondi differently than you would Billy Hamilton or Terrence Gore or a Whit Merrifield for that matter. But you know, first of all, we got to get them to understand who they are. A lot of times when you have that speed, and you've got a chance to be a different maker in an organization, you've got a lot of people yapping in your ear, what you need to do, what you need to do, what you need, what you need to do, right? And it gets to be, it tends to be a bit confusing. My orders here with our staff is nobody talks to Billy about hitting except for Mitch, Terry Bradshaw and Pedro, and Mitch talks to him about bunting. I don't want anybody giving their input. If you've got input, you take it to Terry Bradshaw and let him filter through it. I don't want too many people in his ear, because Terry knows exactly what he needs to do to help develop this kid, both, you know, right and left-handed. Mitch knows exactly what he needs to do to help him continue to, you know, excel in his bunting game. And, you know, I think that just a change of scenery, a different place and a different, you know, just a few different voices is going to help him dramatically.
You talked about the shift and everybody hitting into the shift. Are you going to not hit into the shift? Are you going to?
Well, who's going to hit in the shift?
Well,
great question. I'm not saying. It's a great question, because I sit down and again, stay focused on trying to let's do something different.
Right.
I couldn't do it. All right. So first of all, when people say I can't do it, you know, I can buy in a little bit, because I couldn't do it. I could not hit the ball the other way. I tried. But again, back in those days, they didn't have coaches develop you at the big league level. If you couldn't do it, they just sent your butt back to AAA, and they told you to do it. I mean, how do I do it? Somebody tell me how to do it. No, I never had that. We have that now. But I couldn't do it. So if I sit down and I look, who are they going to shift? O'Hearn, maybe? They might. But O'Hearn has shown a propensity that he can drive the ball the other way. Alex Gordon, I want him to shift Alex Gordon right now, because Alex, especially from the middle of August on, really focused his game from, you know, right field, right center, boom, to the whole field. So Alex got a lot of hits last year beating the shift from August on. So I think that if they shift Alex, it's going to be an advantage to us. I think if they shift O'Hearn, O'Hearn is going to have to do some things to, you know, to kind of battle back a little bit from that. And he's the prototypical guy that you shift, all right? Has he got power? Can he hit a home run? Would you rather take a single than a homer? That's always a big question, right? But still, in order for them to stop doing it, you're going to have to do things differently. You're going to have to lay down some bunts. You're going to have to show them you can hit the ball the other way. But outside of those two guys, they're really not going to shift anybody else on our team. So as a focus for us to sit back and say, okay, we got to really concentrate on beating the shift, we don't have anybody right now that's going to have to do that. So that's something I don't think that we really have to worry about right now. Will it present itself later and we're going to have to look at it depending if our personnel changes? Yeah, but right now I don't think it's a focus.
So conceptually, though, with players that may come along, at the risk of drawing your ire, as perhaps I risked the other day about the opener, like a lot of people are talking about outlawing the shift or putting a line in the dirt, you can't move beyond there. My point would be that the game will correct itself. If you just leave it alone.
I hope so.
But it's going to need to start with, you know, the grade school and the high school kids and the college kids going the other way and dropping the bunt down. You shift on me, fine, I'll take the single.
I hope
and
you're
go
right.
down. Or can you change it up here? That's kind of what I was getting to.
I don't know, man. You know, I haven't seen a lot of willingness to change it up here, to be honest with you. And I think our game's in a little bit of trouble. I mean, I just do. I just think that, you know, our fans want to see exciting baseball. And I don't think that they're seeing a whole lot of exciting baseball anymore. You know, with guys just constantly, boom, hitting into the shift, hitting into the shift, hitting into the shift, hitting into the shift. Again, you talk about eliminating the pitchers hitting and everybody DHing. I mean, just throw all the strategy out the window if you do that. Because now you've got the shift. It's basically eliminating singles. If you eliminate singles, what strategy do you have? All right, you don't have to steal. You don't have to bunt. You don't have to hit and run because nobody's on first base to do it anymore. So all you're thinking about is when my pitcher gets tired, I'm going to take him out of the ball game. All right, and who am I going to match up with him? Well, okay, wake me up when that time comes. All right, it's the way the game is right now, seriously. And I just think that this is such a great game. But what makes me a little nervous is this game in the last 15 years has changed more in 15 years than it has in 100 years. And we did okay the first 100 years.
Yeah.
And it's a great game. And it's an exciting game. And it's a fun game. But I think it's losing some of its excitement. At least that's my opinion.
Right.
You know, do I want to outlaw the shift? No. But yeah. You know, I want more action, right? I do. I want more action. I want more singles. I want more base hits. You know, they say, well, the game's too fast. We're going to do – they're talking about, you know, you've got – your relievers have got to face three hitters. What are we talking about? I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. What are we doing? That takes away more strategy in the ballgame. Well, we need to pick up the pace of game. We got to make the games faster. You want to make the games faster? Go seven innings. Make it a seven-inning game, all right? Now, all of a sudden, our starting pitchers, everybody only wants them to go five innings anyway. So you send your starter out there for five innings. You got 2 innings to peel, and then all of a sudden, the game's done an hour quicker. You accomplish every goal without changing the game.
Can't the pitch clock and I think get the batter in the box and don't let him out? Won't that pretty much solve it all?
They asked me about that yesterday at Media Day. We have no issue with the pitch clock because if you look at our reports once a week that we get on pace of game, we're always in the top five.
Right.
We play our guys, boom, they're in the box, our pitchers, with the exception of one or two. You know, they're all on the mound. They're all ready to go. So we don't have issues as a team. We do our part. Now, if everybody else in baseball did their part, we wouldn't have to worry about pitch clocks or anything like that. So, I mean, whatever they need to do to speed it up and make, I mean, because, you know, the fan base, you know what struck me funny? I took my grandkids to Disney World 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, right before the Super Bowl or right in the middle. It was before the Chiefs played, as a matter of fact, in their championship game.
Okay.
So there was a lot going on. And you've been to Disney World, right?
Yes.
You know there's a bazillion people there.
Yes.
I saw, and I don't know how many, but I guarantee you it was 150 baseball hats on fans before I saw the first football hat in the middle of the football playoffs. And over the course of the 3 days there, it was 40-1. Baseball hats, Royal hats, Phillies hats, Yankees hats, Giant hats, Dodger hats. It was 40-1 over football. The first guy that I saw, like 6 hours into being there wearing a football hat, I stopped him and congratulated him. You're the first guy that I've seen all day wear a football hat.
Did he know who you were?
No, he didn't have any idea. He thought I was some, like, crackpot, right? Yeah. But it just showed our fans are there. You know what? People love baseball. They love it. And I just want to make sure that we continue to keep this game healthy, that we can continue to keep this game exciting and keep this game moving and keep this game fun and keep this game where, you know, you can see young players develop at a young age and then become stars like we did with Hosmer and Moustakas and Kane and Escobar, and then, you know, have a growing attachment all through your life with these guys like our older fans did with George Brett and Frank White. And, you know, I just want to make sure that we continue that, you know, as a sport.
All right, that's Ned Yost. We're going to take a break here. We're at spring training here with the Kansas City Royals in Surprise, Arizona. Our coverage brought to you by Sprint and Velocity Academy, velocityacademy.org, right off 71 Highway in Belton, getting you or your youngster ready. Baseball, softball, all the latest technologies, they're available. Rapsodo, Hittrax, Garmin Impact Technologies, the Driveline, pitching and hitting, you can get it all right there in Belton, just off 71 Highway, velocityacademy.org. Our coverage also brought to you by Sprint. We come back, we'll talk to Ned about his bullpen next here in the program. Welcome back here in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Sorrento Petro with you. Our conversation with Ned Yost, as we spoke with him yesterday afternoon, talking to Ned about his bullpen. By the way, our coverage brought to you by Sprint and Velocity Academy. Thanks to the folks at Sprint for all their wireless technologies. My Sprint iPad, our Sprint phones, enabling us to work on the road just like we're in the office. So thank you to our friends at Sprint. Talked to Ned about how successful his bullpen was in 14 and 15 and what they were able to do, kind of really revolutionize the game, and whether or not that formula still works, or is everyone pretty much, at least the formula for building that bullpen, or has everybody taken that formula around baseball and made it that much harder for the Royals to do that?
Oh, yeah. I think Dayton changed the game years ago when he did that. I mean, I'll never forget him coming to me and saying, look, we're not going to have the money that it takes to compete with the starting pitching market. What I want to do is, he said, I want to fill the back end of our bullpen with quality arms and shorten the game. First time I ever heard it. First time I ever thought about it. I'm like, well, that makes sense. I didn't have any idea how well that strategy would work, and it did. We had a lead in the fifth inning. That game was over because we had 4 and 5 closers down there.
Yeah,
you know, we just did. Hoach was a closer. Mattson could have closed. Of course, you had Kelvin. You had Wade. You had Holly. You had Jason Frazier. You had Franklin Morales to handle the fifth. Hoach and Mattson for the sixth, and you just turned it over, right? Turned it over. You know, I sat a lot this winter trying to analyze our bullpen and how to maximize our bullpen. And, you know, I wish we had the HDH again, you know. Yeah. But I don't know if anybody will, you know. I don't know. That was really, I mean, ultra, ultra special. So now I think we've got a bunch of veteran guys that are competing for spots that are capable of handling high leverage. So I purposely, and I think as an organization, you know, we purposely haven't told anybody that they're the closer. You're not going to be the closer. Doesn't right now. And I want to just try, you know, having 3 guys, maybe 4 guys that can handle high leverage situations and use them accordingly in high leverage situations. Now, does that put more pressure on a pitcher? Does it take a reliever out of his comfort zone? Yeah, that's what scares me a little bit, because pitchers like to know their routine. When we were so good, Kelvin knew the score. He knew seventh inning, I better be ready because I'm coming in that ballgame. Wade, eighth inning, I bet he'd be ready. And they had their routines. They would start, Wade would start in the sixth, Calvin would start in the fifth, you know, and they would be completely ready physically, mentally, by the time they stepped on that mound. Now, when you're talking about guys with high leverage, when high leverage is going to pop up? You know, you don't know. So these guys are going to have to, you know, be like firemen. They're going to have to be ready at a moment's notice. All right, here you go. You know, it's your turn.
But is that because and the leverage thing has been around. Theo Epstein and the Red Sox in like '02 or '03 talked about that. Now, they didn't have the right guys, right? Still got to have the right horses to make
it go. No doubt.
And so they got kind of laughed at for a year, and then they went and got Keith Foulke, and then they won a World Series.
Sure.
And everyone went, ha-ha, that doesn't work.
That's what I want to see.
Right. Yeah.
And so, I gotta see.
So now, but what I thought was amazing was with your HDH and Madsen and Hochaver and those guys in there, they did know their roles and they could go through that. You know, one of the things we see on TV all the time was Mariano Rivera. There he is with his bands and he's doing his stuff and he's going through because he knew how much time. Hey, I got my 15 minutes at least to go through all my stuff. And here's my weighted ball or whatever the hell all he was doing out there. Right.
Yeah.
I always thought, well, that's what Ned's done. He's got three guys. So I'm like, you're my Mariano Rivera of the eighth. You're my Mariano Rivera of the seventh. So did you find, though, that having that elongated time to get ready, whether it's mental or just actually physically getting him ready, made them better? Or can you hop up, throw six pitches, and come in and be just as good?
The answer to that is I think them knowing their role, knowing when they came in, made them better, right? Yeah. I remember Wade one day came in and a little uncharacteristically, he got two guys on. They didn't score.
Right.
But came in, got two guys on before he got out of the inning. And he came in and he sat down next to me and he goes, dang. I said, what's the matter? He goes, when you called down and tell me to get up, he said, I thought it was the sixth inning. It was the seventh. And he missed the inning. And he missed all that time. And it threw him off. And I've never forgotten that. You know, he covered it.
Well, and it's the mindset, too. This is your job as the man, which you've always talked about, managing the personalities. Because I sat him down and said, hey, do you set goals of, like, I want to get 40 saves? He goes, whoa, no, because I might not get there. And I was like, wait a minute, you're one of the most dominant guys around. And he's like, no, don't put that out there. I said, well, can we set a goal of one save?
Yeah.
He goes, okay, yeah, I'll go with that. We get one goal, one save.
I'm interested to see how this goes. I'm not sold that it's going to work.
Okay.
But I'm going to try it in spring training and see.
Okay.
And start the year that way. I'm hoping that it could work. It's a mindset. It's like anything else. You know, if you teach a kid young, you know, that this is the way it's going to be, I think by the time – you know, they're going to be able to do it. You talked about it earlier.
Right. But part of it's you finding out who can do what, right? Brad Boxberger told me, because I mentioned the leverage thing, I said, you might have to get up and be ready to roll. I said, how quick can you get ready? He said, six pitches.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can be ready to go in six pitches.
Right.
So if that's true, then on a day you know Boxberger, that's the other thing fans don't realize. You go out there, and not every guy sitting out there is available.
But then again, what the fans have to realize is Boxberger said, I can be ready in six pitches, right?
Right.
So by the time he throws the six pitches, by the time I walk out, he's going to have four more, right? And then by the time he gets on the mound, he's going to have eight more.
Right.
So he's never going to get caught short.
Right.
You know, I mean, but that's what you look for. I always tell those guys, let me know when you're 5 to 8 pitches away from being ready.
Okay.
And then I will give you those 5 to 8 pitches, and you get eight more out here.
Yeah.
So, but
it is a process of you knowing it might be
a mindset
where pitcher A is not available tonight, and he's my guy who can do it. So we go to plan B, and I got this group that's available. This guy's going to have to be my seventh. This is going to be my eighth.
It is.
Hopefully, my starter goes nine, and this is all irrelevant, but.
Well, that's where communication's going to come into, you know, where we're going to have to call down to the bullpen and say, hey, look, if something develops, you know, Diekman, you're going to be my guy right here. We're five hitters away from these three lefties coming up, and, you know, hopefully we can get through this inning right here. But if things develop, you start preparing yourself mentally, you know, for this situation. And, you know, it's just going to be a little more communication than normal. You know, when you set your roles down there, guy, you don't have to communicate. You don't have to call Cal and tell him he's going to be in seventh. He knows. But an advantage that we have down there, too, is Vance Wilson, who keeps these guys ultra prepared. And, ready to go every day, too.
All right, that's Royals manager Ned Yost. We'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, Ned gets the final four. A couple of very funny answers from Ned, I think, in this. It's brought to you by our friends at the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute. Coming up next, it is our final four here in the program, live in Surprise, Arizona. We're talking to Ned Yost. He loves to communicate, doing it with us right now, the manager of the Kansas City Royals. Ned, my final four for you, four quickies, brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute, community's first and only hospital dedicated exclusively to orthopedics with an ortho-urgent care open 7 days a week. Go to kcoi.com.
Love those orthopedics.
Yeah, yes, you do, which is my first final four. Have you been in a deer stand lately?
Every day.
Really?
Every day during the winter. Yeah, just about every day.
So no, was it, do you have a little fear?
No, never. Time? No, I made him. It was an accident. I know exactly what happened. I mean, I actually climbed up that tree that I fell out of. The stand was gone because it went to the ground with me. But I climbed up that tree 30 feet, cut down all the straps and took down the ladders. I wasn't going to walk by and, let it laugh at me. And actually, while the straps were still up, I would drive by it and look at it and give it the finger, and I said, "That's it. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm taking it down." So I climbed up there and took it all down. That was kind of the closure I needed.
Okay, what's your reaction to Manny Machado, $300 million deal?
Good for him.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard for me to have a reaction on something like that. I mean, I'm glad to see that finally one of the major free agents have signed. I was more excited that Mike Moustakas signed.
Right.
Times 10 than Manny Machado, but that's just me.
Okay. What's your favorite stat?
My favorite stat? Wins.
Wins? But beyond
wins. It's a stat.
It is a stat.
Well, then, that was the question.
No, that's the record. What's your favorite stat? Oh, I'm making dig a little further. What do you like? What's one that you look at?
Again, I think my new favorite stat is going to be runs scored.
Okay.
And that's imperative that our guys have that mindset more than anything else. When they step up to the plate, I got to come back around and touch this thing right here. And if we can do it, if Billy Hamilton can do it more than 100 times, and Witt and Mary and Mondy can do it more than 100 times, we're going to be in pretty good shape.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question I asked you, I think, 5 or 6 years ago, and your answer was one or two then. And I've asked you subsequently, and you say things like, why do people keep asking me this? Because you seem to have forgotten. You said one or two, or 2 years, I think you told me at the time. How long are you going to manage?
I don't know. I don't. I really don't. I
mean, you seem to know, like, 6 years ago that it was.
That's because my
years.
Wife was pounding on my head. She's okay now. She knows. She's all right. I don't know. I still have the energy. I still love doing what I'm doing. I love rebuilding because I like to see young kids. We lost 104 games last year, and I was more excited to come to spring training this year than I've been in a long, long time. Why? Because of the improvements that we made from the middle of August through September. To see young kids come up and work so hard and have some success, that's where I find my enjoyment. People don't understand this aspect of the game, but when we won the World Series, I was more proud that Mike Moustakas, Escobar, Kane, Salvi, Hosmer, that they were world champions than winning a world championship. I was glad we won a world championship. I was more happy for our fans that we won a world championship, that I won a world championship, that I was a part of it. So that's where my enjoyment comes, seeing them reach goals, seeing them have success at the big league level, hopefully seeing them become all-stars and world champions again is where my satisfaction comes. So I still enjoy what I do every single day. I still love working with Swanee, with Dayton, with my coaches. We have a great Dayton, and I have the longest working relationship in anybody in baseball. It's because we work together well. We both have the same values and the same focus and the same goals as an organization. People are clamoring to be a Kansas City Royal because of what this organization represents. And I love being a part of that.
Yeah. How did you say your wife sounded again?
How's she what?
You said your wife was banging on you. How'd that sound?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
And she goes, it's time. We got grandkids now, and it's time for you to end. I was like, calm down, baby. Calm down. We're going to be all right. But this ain't help. She's flying in today. It's not going to help matters that it's 35 degrees. If I could just have a nice hair to help her.
Buy into the process.
Yeah, there you go.
Ned, thanks so much for your time. You're always very kind and generous with it. We really appreciate it. Best of luck here in spring training. We'll see you in KC.
Thank you, guys. Stay warm here now.